silently posed by K.K. Nambiar. People who visited Sri Bhagavan during his lifetime could not have failed to observe the characteristic of pose in which he reclined on his sofa with eyes closed and his head supported with his left arm. You know, like that. Oh, like this. That's what we have on the altar in Nova Scotia. You know. They gave us that. You saw the ones that are Nutshell ones.
They're full pose with his legs.
Yeah.
I like that.
Particularly at the time of Vedaparayana and so on. Some of us devotees sitting around used to watch him intently during such periods. On several occasions, I used to mentally pray to him that on reopening his eyes, he should bestow a look on me. And I must say, I was never disappointed. There must have been competition for that. So it was crystal clear to me that prayers to Bhagavan need not be vocal, and he felt, knew, and answered the inner prayers of all his devotees. Conversely, there were also occasions when I sat at the feet of Bhagavan and intently meditated on his form with closed eyes. And most often when I opened my eyes, Sri Bhagavan appeared to be watching me. It is a great comfort even now to recall the experience of those exquisite moments which stand out so vividly in my memory. Time hasn't effaced even a fraction of those vistas. Reminiscences of a Patriot by Bharatananda. Reminiscences of a Visit to Bhagavan by Rajendra Prasad, who was later to become President of India, with the industrialist Jamnalal Bajaj and others. Bajaj, they have the
scooters.
You know, we went to visit his son when he was in New Jersey with Bajaj.
Oh, it's the same Bajaj.
Yeah, the same guy who started that, yeah. And Bhagavan wanted to show him all the conversations. It's in talks also. I don't know if it's the same thing from talks here, but. Jamnalal Bajaj, how is sabuddhi to be steadily kept up?
Sabuddhi?
Well, buddhi means like intellect. And sad maybe pure.
Pure consciousness.
Pure thought, maybe. All living beings are aware of their surroundings, and therefore intellect must be surmised in all of them. At the same time, there is a difference between the intellect of man and that of other animals, because man not only sees the world as it is and acts accordingly, but also seeks fulfillment of desires and is not satisfied with the state of affairs. We should all act like animals, I think, right? But the world would be a better place. You know, some food comes and
some of us would be killing some other
animals.
We would attack and fight for food too when it comes.
Yeah.
But there's enough food. We don't have to fight for it. We just eat if we just
fight for
it. We just consume what we need. Mm. No fights are necessary, right? Because man not only sees the world as it is and acts accordingly, but also seeks fulfillment of desires and is not satisfied with the state of affairs. In his attempt to fulfill his desires, he extends his vision far and wide. In that, he turns away dissatisfied. He then begins to think and reason out. The desire for permanency of happiness and of peace bespeaks of such permanency of his own nature. Therefore, he seeks to find and regain his own nature, that is, his self. That found, all is found. Such inward seeking is a path to be gained by man's intellect. The intellect itself realizes after continuous practice that it is enabled by some higher power to function. It cannot itself reach that power, so it ceases to function after a certain stage. When it thus ceases to function, the supreme power is still left there all alone. That is realization. That is the finality. And that is the goal. It is thus plain that the purpose of the intellect is to realize its own dependence on the higher power and its inability to reach the same. So it must annihilate itself before the goal is gained. Janmala Bajaj, quoting, quote, I do not desire kingdoms, etc., only let me serve thee forever. There is my highest desire, unquote. Is that right? Bottom line, yes. There is room for kama, desire, so long as there is an object apart from the subject. That is, as long as there is duality. There can be no desire if there is no object. The state of no desire is moksha. There is no duality in sleep, and so also no desire. Whereas there is duality in the waking state, and so also desire is there. Because of duality, a desire arises for the acquisition of the object. That is the outgoing mind, bahirmukha vritti, which is the basis of duality and of desire. If one knows that the bliss is none other than the self, the mind becomes inward turned. If the self is gained, all the desires are fulfilled. That is said to be avapta karma. In the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, that is moksha. Janmala Bajaj trying to make himself clear by saying that what is meant by sabbuddhi is not the same as buddhi, but means that which holds fast to the good, the right, and the chosen path. Wanted to know how such steadfastness could be gained. Bhagavan, what is wanted for gaining the highest goal is the loss of individuality. The intellect is coextensive with individuality. The loss of individuality can only come after the disappearance of buddhi, sat or asat. The question therefore does not arise. Janmala Bajaj, but yet one must know the right thing, choose the right path, practice the right dharma, and hold fast to it. Otherwise one is lost. Bhagavan, true, strength accrues by holding to the right direction without swerving from it. Janmala Bajaj, difficulties are met with. How is one to get the necessary strength to overcome the obstacles which beset one's path? Bhagavan, by bhakti and satsang. Janmala Bajaj, loss of individuality has just been mentioned as a prerequisite for moksha. Now, devotion and association with the wise are advised as a method. Is individuality not implied in them? For example, I am a bhakta, I am a satsangi. Bhagavan, the method is pointed out to the seeker. The seeker has certainly not lost his individuality so far. Otherwise, the question would not have arisen. The way is shown to effect the loss of individuality of the seeker. It is thus appropriate. Bajaj, is the desire for political independence right? Bhagavan, such desire begins with self-interest. Prolonged practical work for the goal gradually widens and the outlook so that the individual becomes merged in the country. Such merging of the individual is desirable and the karma is nishkama. Bajaj. If independence is gained after a long struggle and terrible sacrifice, isn't the person justified in being pleased with the result and elated by it? Bajaj. Was Nepal occupied by British?
No.
Never. What?
It wasn't occupied at all. I think they couldn't go get over the mountains in Africa. Yeah. The king did a battle with the British. He gave Darjeeling and Shimla.
So he said, leave us alone and I'll give you something?
Yes.
Gave him some gold or something?
Yeah. And lots of wood.
Wood? Oh, okay.
For the railway. Mm.
Bajaj, how can unerring rectitude be insured for the worker? Bhagavan, if he has surrendered himself to God or Guru, the power to which he has surrendered will guide him in the right way. The worker need no longer concern himself about the rectitude or otherwise of his course. The doubt will arise only if he did not obey the master in all details. Bajaj, is there not any power on earth which can bestow grace on its devotees so that they may grow strong to work for the country and gain independence? Sri Maharshi remained silent. Bajaj, is not the tapas of the ancient Mahatmas of the land available for the benefit of its present day inheritors? Bajaj, it is, but it must be remembered that no one can claim to be the sole beneficiary. The benefits are shared by all alike. After a pause, is it without such grace that the present awakening has come into being? Bajaj, after a short pause, Sri Rajendra Prasad is such a noble and selfless worker for the country that he has sacrificed a very lucrative career for this work. The country needs him. Yet he is not in good health and is always weak and ailing. Why should there be such cruelty to such a noble son of the country? Sri Maharshi simply smiled benignantly.
Benignantly.
It's not nine, it's nig.
Yeah.
I thought you said, the person is benign.
You said benign, but if you say that, benignantly, you say it the other way.
Sure. Quote from Maharshi, the whole Vedanta is contained in the two biblical statements, I am that I am, and be still, and know that I am God. Which drove all the pundits crazy. Because they got so many Mahavakyas, you know. Aham Brahmasmi. And you quote the Bible. They used to try to argue with him about it. He goes, I don't know, that's just the way I feel.
Did you print that? You have I Am That in your room. Did you print it down here?
No. It's a bumper sticker. I attempted once online. I never put it on the car, but when I had that car at my mother's house, my mother's car, I saw it online. So I printed a couple of them. There's one here in the entrance room. I had three. I gave Jim one. Actually, it's on the car. the car I had when I was looking after my mother.
Yeah.
I didn't put it on bumper, but if you put the visor down, you'll see it.
Oh. Subtle.
How big can you print one down here?
How big?
Yeah, how large letters can you print one down here?
I can print it on a sheet 11 by 17.
Yeah.
You know, 11 by 17.
That's
yeah. Right. How big do you want it?
I like to have one that says, there is nothing, period, B, period.
How big?
I don't know.
How big?
Sure, there's nothing
be
or being but being.
Yeah. It says there is nothing, period, be, period, like just be.
Ramana Sadguru, Mayasa Khan. Sri Ramana Jayanti has come again, bringing cheer to thousands of Bhagavan devotees, old and new, far and near. On this day they call to mind all he has done for them, all he is to them, and how he has influenced their lives. All devotees who had the rare privilege of a long stay in his physical presence, and their number is diminishing year by year, this is 1966, did he know? Like he lived for another 20 years. Feel that since leaving the body, he has not ceased to work the wonderful transformation in them that he began in life. Newcomers also feel his powerful support in their sadhana. When Bhagavan used to say that the guru is not the body, many failed to grasp his meaning. But as time passed, and he continued to show them his grace and support in their meditation, the significance of these words gradually became clear, so that they eventually ceased to think of him as a person with a body to reminisce about. In this connection, the Bhagavata gives an apt illustration of the relation of a disciple to Guru in the story of Sri Krishna and Uddhava. You know, he did a translation of the Bhagavata. You know, big S.S. Cohen. The publication of the Russian.
Bhagavatam is not the Mahabharata, it's not the Bhagavad Gita.
No, Bhagavatam is Krishna's Lila.
Krishna's Lila.
When Sri Krishna ended his mission on earth and was prepared to return to Vaikuntha, his eternal abode, Uddhava, who was greatly attached to his person, appealed to him with tears in his eyes to take him along with him, saying, I have strong forebodings, O Supreme Yogi, that after destroying the Yadu race, you will leave the earth altogether. I cannot bear to be away from your feet even for a moment. Grant that I may be taken with you to your divine abode. How can I now be separated from you? Krishna answered that it would be in Uddhava's own interest not to cling to Krishna's body, but to stay on after him and practice yoga in the Himalayas. Quote, after shaking off all attachments to your family and kinsfolk, keeping your mind fixed wholly on me, unquote. Quote, you must always remember, friend Uddhava, he continued, that whatever is thought by the mind, perceived by the eye and ear, and spoken by the tongue, is a creation of the mind and therefore illusory. By controlling your mind and senses, you will see the world in your own self, and yourself and me, the Supreme Lord. Possessed of this knowledge and immersed in the contentment of self-realization, you will experience no obstruction in life. Sri Bhagavan knew, like Sri Krishna, that nothing is more productive of the highest spiritual results than concentration of the mind on one's real nature, which is the absolute reality, the Lord Himself, the Supreme Guru. Attachment to the service of the outer guru in the form of the master takes only a secondary place. The following incident, which occurred in my presence, shows how Bhagavan graded meditation higher than service. Once a devotee who was in charge of English correspondence in the ashram office was unavailable, and the Sarvadikari asked Major Chadwick, who was then living in the ashram, to take his place. Chadwick refused, but felt a prick of conscience for doing so. After dinner that night, when we were alone, or almost alone with Bhagavan, I don't exactly remember, after these 27 or 28 years, Chadwick told him about it and asked whether he had done right. Bhagavan answered that Chadwick was doing him greater service by meditating, thereby greatly relieving the latter's mind. Bhagavan was often asked about the necessity of a guru for the attainment of liberation, and used to answer that the guru was necessary. And indeed, mere study of the Upanishads is unlikely to lead very far, whereas association with the sage and absorption of his instruction, based on his own experience, may quickly bring about the requisite comprehension leading towards liberation. No doubt some sages, like Bhagavan, had attained the goal without a guru in human form. But these were rare beings who had already in their past lives brought their sadhana so far that only a little further effort was needed. Footnote. There is also the very rare case of a guru who, like Sri Ramana, continues to act as such after shedding the body. For his disciples also, no guru in human form is necessary. The editor, keep bringing up that point throughout all these articles. The editor put the, yeah, that's our bad one. Okay. That only a little further effort was needed. There is no need to go into the detail about Bhagavan's teaching. It is simple, unorthodox Advaita Vedanta is taught in the Upanishad, the Gita, the Bhagavata, and the writings of Shankara, Vidyaranya, Gaudapada, and others. We find in it complete consistency and likening Jagrat, the waking state, to Swapna, the dream state. Both are changeable and impermanent, so that when one is on the other is off. Whereas he who dreams and wakes is the same person present in both. There's a traditional story that illustrates this. Once a king dreamed that he was a young man of the name of Chandu, owning a prosperous grocery. One day, Panji, a beautiful outcast girl, came half-drunk to buy betel nuts from him. She roused his passion by her seductive demeanor, or, he has in parentheses, misdemeanor. Misdemeanor. To such an extent that he decided to marry her, even though it would mean loss of cash for him. When she became his wife, Panji turned out very vicious, but Chandu overlooked all her faults owing to his infatuation for her. Her wants proved insatiable, ruining his business and driving him to take up work reserved for outcasts. This went on for 20 years, during which time he had 3 children by Panji, of whom the eldest, a boy, grew to be even more wicked than his mother. With his increased family, Chandu had to take to dishonest means of livelihood to add to his income, and he suffered the consequences. He sank lower and lower till one day his son, in a fit of rage, hanged himself. The king officers, suspecting Chandu of being the murderer, took him to prison and beat him mercilessly. He cried out so loud that, let us not forget that the king in his waking state was it, that the king that forget that he was a king in his waking state, it woke his queen, who was sleeping nearby. She got up and shook him and woke him too, thereby ending the ordeal of the dream Chandu. The king was so much shaken by his dream ordeal that he shut himself in the apartments for several days and did not resume his royal duties till he had committed the whole experience to paper. His minister made it into a book under the title The Autobiography of Chandu. How, I asked, does this autobiography differ from those pertaining to and written in the waking state? His 20 years of suffering were real to Chandu, as also was his infatuation for Panji, his criminal life, and the beating he received in prison. If you argue that the whole story was conceived in the king's own mind, so also were all his waking experiences, like those of all of us. Dreams also have their time and space and natural laws, just as the waking state has. As for Chandu, he is the experiencer of the three states. In the waking state, he is the king. In the dream state, a merchant who became an outcast. While in the deep sleep state, he plays no role, but is still himself. Whereas the states come and go, their experiencer is always the same. It is said that he who understands the 10 verses of the Mandukya Upanishad has no need to study the other Upanishads because they show the world to be a state of the mind, just like the other two states. And also because what it leaves unsaid but inferred is as important as what it says. From its representing the three states as the only states through which the jiva passes in its apparent peregrination, we have to conclude that death introduces no new state for the ordinary man, but only retains what he now experiences, namely the conditions of dream and sleep, or an alternation of the two, till rebirth in a new body takes place and restores a waking state also. So they say when you die, you still continue with the dream and the deep sleep until you wake up into a new body and you get the Jagrat state. Then you get all three again. The same applies to loss of consciousness due to drugs, anesthetics, fainting fits, or the laya of Hatha Yoga, misnamed Samadhi. But the sage is above all three states, both in this life and after death, being established permanently in Turiya, the fourth, which is pure consciousness, the nature of the self, and from which there is no return to the body. He has freed himself from the pangs of birth and death forever. Such a one was Bhagavan Sri Rama.
I've never heard that before, that your dream and deep sleep state kept going.
That's
like
the soul travels to another body, right?
So just the mind. The mind goes with you. Here's some quotes from Bhagavan. Devotee. The Buddhists deny the world, whereas Hindu philosophy admits its existence but calls it unreal. Isn't that so? Bhagavan, it is only a difference of point of view. Devotee. They say the world is created by divine energy, Shakti. Is the knowledge of unreality due to the veiling by illusion, Maya? Bhagavan, all admit creation by the divine energy. But what is the nature of this energy? It must be in conformity with the nature of its creation. Devotee, are there degrees of illusion? Bhagavan, illusion itself is illusory. It must be seen by somebody outside it. But how can such a seer be subject to it? So how can he speak of degrees of it? You see various scenes passing on a cinema screen. Fire seems to burn buildings to ashes. Water seems to wreck ships. But the screen on which the pictures are projected remains unburnt and dry. Why? Because the pictures are unreal and the screen is real. Similarly, reflections pass through a mirror, but it is not affected at all by their number or quality. In the same way, the world is a phenomena upon the substratum of the single reality, which is not affected by it in any way. Reality is only one. Talk of illusion is due only to the point of view. Change your viewpoint to that of knowledge, and you will perceive the universe to be only Brahman. Being now immersed in the world, you see it as a real world. Get beyond it, and it will disappear, and reality alone will remain. Here is the essence of the Gita selected by Ramana Maharshi. A devotee once complained to Bhagavan that it was hard to keep the 700 verses of the Bhagavad Gita in one's memory, and asked whether it would not be possible to pick out the most important verses for remembrance. Bhagavan accordingly selected 42 verses, which he arranged an appropriate order. Further asked if any of these can be regarded as most essential, he mentioned Book 10, verse 20. Ahamatma Gorakesha Sarvabhuta Saya. And that is the verse which comes forth in his enumeration, I am the Self, O Gorakesha, dwelling in the heart of every being. I am the beginning and the middle, and also the end of all beings. Since this issue of the mountain path is devoted to Bhagavan Ramana, we here reproduce this condensation in its traditional ashram translation instead of our usual chapter. He also wrote one of the headline verses for this, to memorize these, using the first word of every verse and making a verse out of that. Those 42 verse words are first syllables.
Okay.
And he makes a verse, and if you remember that verse, you'll remember
the order
of those.
Yeah.
He did it for this also. I don't know where it is, but that's right. Sanjaya said, one, to him, Arjuna, thus filled with compassion and in despair, his eyes distressed and full of tears, spoke, Madhusudana, these words. The Blessed Lord said, this body, O son of Kunti, is called the Kshetra, the field. Him who knows it, the sages call the Kshetrajna, knower of the field. Know me also as the knower of the field, and all the fields, O Bharat. Knowledge of the field and the knower of the field I deem to be true knowledge. I am the Self, O Guru Kesha, dwelling in the heart of every being. I am the beginning and the middle, and also the end of all beings. Of those born, the death is certain, and certain the birth of those dead. Therefore, for what none can prevent, thou shouldst not grieve. You know, Narasimhan may be dying.
Oh, really?
I'm thinking going there today, to New Jersey. He's home out of the hospital. What?
Can I go with you?
Yeah, I have to. He kind of wants to go or something. I don't know if you know Narasimhan.
Oh.
He may be dying. I think he's dying.
Really?
They brought him out of the... Jyoti brought him out of the hospital.
Upstate, huh?
No, he's in Princeton.
Oh, Instrument.
Yeah. If you want to.
Yeah.
We're gonna go to today. You want to go?
Yeah, we'll go.
We'll go with your car then.
Yeah.
And come over sometime in the morning.
What time?
Anytime, what? 9:10?
Okay.
You met him.
I have to go for visit. Like, if I come here by 10:30, 11.
That'll be fine. Yeah.
Okay. Because
9. You met Narasimhan?
Yeah, we went to their house. Remember?
Yeah, we went. Yeah. So you know,
now he was in the hospital. I didn't know he was ill.
Oh, well, he had pneumonia. Where he stopped eating pretty much. She went and took him out of the hospital on Sunday. And he's not eating really, you know. I talked with him a little bit. He could hardly hear me, but he's, you know, I said, okay, say hey. usual TK, TK, TK. You know, this is a regular conversation we have all the time.
Yeah. How old? He used to call you comrade.
Comrade?
He used to call us all comrade.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
But, you know, he's very weak. And he can't walk, I don't think. And Jyoti said, you better come if you're going to
come. He's like a little grasshopper. He's tiny.
Yeah.
How old is he?
Must be mid-80s or so.
Oh, yeah.
Young, right, Michael?
Yeah.
Six. Never is he born, nor does he die. Nor having been, ceaseth he any more to be. So we've known him since the 70s.
Mm,
yeah. You know his, remember when Sandel, his son died when he was just 16?
Yeah, that time.
And we went up there, I remember that.
Yeah.
And his wife died maybe 3 years ago now. Indra, very devoted.
Yeah.
His wife brother did the translation into Tamil of Ramana Maharshi in the Path of Self-Work. His wife's brother worked with Professor K. Swaminathan on those 99 volumes of the collected works of Mahatma Gandhi.
Oh.
They're appointed by Indira Gandhi to do that with Professor K. Swaminathan. I used to visit them, you know, every time I went to India. I stopped in Chennai. But he used to, you know, he worked in, he was doing a PhD, and he got a big offer from a chemical company, I don't know. And so he took the job, he quit his PhD. Then he worked for many years, then he wanted to go back and help India. So he quit the job, he worked for Tata.
Oh.
Industries in Bombay, trying to develop some programs, you know. And, then he came back. When he came back to get a job again, he stayed in the ashram in 6th Street, remember?
Yeah.
Looking for jobs around. Then he came, got a job somewhere. Then his wife came. Children came, because they went, children were young. We know them all, but they're young. We used to stop at their house often, you know, going to Nova Scotia or something, because they lived in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
They used to come up there. Not to be cleft is he, not to be burnt is he, not even to be wetted, nor yet to be dried is he. Abiding, he is and all-pervading, stable, immovable, and from everlasting. Never is he born, nor does he die, nor having been, ceases he any more to be. Unborn, abiding, eternal, ancient, he is not slain when the body is slain. Know that to be indestructible, whereby all this is pervaded, of this immutable none can work destruction. Of the non-existent, there is no being. Of what it exists, there is no not being. The definite ascertainment of both is seen by the seers of the essence of truth. As ether everywhere present is not polluted by virtue of its subtlety, even so the self abiding everywhere is not polluted in the body. Nor sun, nor moon, nor fire illumines it. The whither having gone, men return not. And whither having gone, men return not. That is my supreme abode. and manifest and imperishable in this called, and this they proclaim the supreme state, from which when once attained, they return not. That is my supreme abode. Without pride, without delusion, victorious over the blemish of attachment, ever abiding in the self, their desires abandoned, released from the pairs called pleasure and pain, they go undiluted to that immutable abode. He who forsakes the ordinances of the scriptures and acts under the influence of desire attains not perfection, not happiness, nor the supreme state. He who sees the Supreme Lord dwelling alike in all beings, perishing not as they perish, he it is who sees right. By devotion alone, without otherness, O Arjuna, can I be known, seen, and in essence entered, O Parantapa. The faith of every man, O Bharata, accords with the essential character. Man is instinct with faith. As that wherein a man has faith, so is he. He that has intense faith, and to that faith being devoted, has the senses controlled, gains knowledge, and having gained knowledge, he swiftly attains supreme peace. To those who are self-attuned and who worship me with loving devotion, I give that union with understanding whereby they come to me. Out of compassion for them and abiding in their self, I destroy with the resplendent light of knowledge their darkness born of ignorance. And those in whom ignorance is destroyed by knowledge of the self, knowledge like the sun illumines that supreme. High, they say, are the senses. Higher than the senses is the mind. And higher than the mind is the understanding. But one who is higher than understanding is he. Thus knowing him to be higher than the understanding, steadying the self by the self. O thou strong arm, slay the enemy in the form of desire so hard to overcome. Just as a burning fire makes ashes of its fuel, O Arjuna, even so does the fire of knowledge make ashes of all works. Him whose every enterprise is without desire or motive, whose actions are burnt up in the fire of knowledge, the wise call a sage. All around the austere sages, free from desire and wrath, who have subdued their mind and have realized the self, radiates the beatific peace of Brahman. Little by little, one should realize tranquility by judgment with steadfast purpose, making the mind abide in the self. One should think of nothing at all. Towards whatsoever the mind wanders, being fickle and unsteady, therefore it should be withdrawn and brought under the sway of the self alone. The saint who devoutly seeks liberation, with the senses, mind, and intellect subdued, without desire, fear, or wrath, is indeed ever liberated. He who is steadfast in yoga and looks on everything impartially, sees the self dwelling in all beings, and all beings in the self. I undertake to secure and protect the welfare of those who without otherness meditate on me and worship me, and who ever abide thus attuned. Of thee, the jnani who is ever attuned, whose devotion is centered in me, is the most excellent, because to the jnani I am exceedingly dear and he is dear to me. At the end of many births, the jnani finds refuge in me, recognizing that Vasudeva is all. Such a high soul is very hard to find. When one puts away, O Partha, all the desires that are in the mind, and in the self alone, by the self, is well satisfied, then as one is called a man of steadfast wisdom. That man attains peace who, having cast away all desires, remains without longing, devoid of eye and mind. He by whom the world is not disturbed, and who is not disturbed by the world, free from exaltation, impatience, fright, and agitation, he is dear to me. He who holds honor and dishonor, equal the friendly party and the foe, who has renounced all enterprise, he is said to have transcended the gunas. The man who revels here and now in the self alone, with the self, is satisfied, and in the self alone is content. For him, there is no work to do. For him, there is no purpose, either in doing work or in leaving it undone. Nor is there in all being anything which serves him as a purpose. Content to take what chance may bring, having transcended the pairs of opposites, free from ill will, and even-minded in success or failure, though he works, he is not bound. The Lord, O Arjuna, dwells in the heart of every being, and his mysterious power spins round all beings as it set in the wheel. And 42, to him alone surrender, O Bharata, with all thy being, by his grace, shalt thou obtain peace supreme, the abode eternal.
Diana wrote that Patricia's
good.